Do you have any data from that study on the quality of life and arthralgias?
Certainly the arthralgia data is being recorded routinely.
Have you seen it yet?
We've reported some of that. Yes, the initial data, there was some interest as to whether or not the arthralgias were associated with low levels of vitamin D. And we felt this was sufficiently important that we should look at this in our data. So we've basically looked at the arthralgias reported in the first year and looked to see whether or not there's any predictive value of baseline vitamin D levels, and we couldn't find any effect at all. So the arthralgia data, essentially we see not a surprising, somewhat higher rates, not enormously higher in the anastrozole arm.
It's a little confusing when, like in the attack data and similar data, is trying to dissect out. I mean, oncologists talk a lot about this issue because it was compared to tamoxifen. Tamoxifen rate was like 30%, and it's just kind of hard to make anything out of it. Any way to put all that together?
I think it reminds me of most clinicians, if you ask them, are convinced that tamoxifen leads to weight gain. It's almost a universal belief amongst many, many clinicians. But yet, if you look at the placebo-controlled data in IBIS-1, P1, or B14, there's just as much weight gain on placebo as there is on tamoxifen. There's no difference whatsoever. I think that's a useful thing to remember, because if you look at the arthralgias in the attack trial, I think it's 30% on tamoxifen, 36% right. on an AI. So there is a real effect, but it's a small effect compared to the fact that arthralgia is not uncommon in early postmenopausal years anyway. I don't think that's a tamoxifen effect. I think that simply reflects the arthralgia reports in this population independent of treatment. So I think that to some extent the AIs are getting blamed for some of the arthralgias that they don't cause. There's no doubt that they do increase the risk, but there are a lot of arthralgias that are going to occur anyway. We'll again learn more about that from the IBIS-2 study, because we'll be comparing anastrozole to placebo, so we'll have the real placebo arm, and there's no doubt that there's a fair amount of arthralgia in the placebo arm.
Well, also from a clinical point of view, when you have a problematic patient, you really want to have them on an AI, maybe they have a node-positive tumor, et cetera, and you can't. I mean, it's something that kind of sticks out in your mind, but we even have a little patterns of care data on that. It's very interesting what docs actually will tell you and researchers, because what we said, and we've asked this several times now, is what fraction of patients that you start on an AI have enough of a problem from your point of view of arthralgias that you consider switching or doing something about it? And they actually came up with a similar number, both the investigators and the docs in practice.
That's interesting.
What do you think the number is?
I think the number is probably 25%, but I think it's too high.
They said 10 to 12%.
Okay. Well, that's,
and that's kind of in line with what you just said about the attack trial.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's probably more like 5 to 10%, actually, but we'll see.
But again, at least from their point of view, and I guess from the data we have, you wouldn't think it would be, you know, 25 or 50%.
The other thing we should probably talk about is not only is the question of duration important for aromatase inhibitors, but I think one of the things that comes out of the LHRH overview is the question of how long ovarian suppression should take place. The trials varied from, I think, 18 months at the low end up to 5 years at the high end, and there isn't really enough data, nor are there any direct comparisons. So I think an important area in terms of the premenopausal endocrine treatment is how long should ovarian suppression take place, and it would be nice to see some trials of 2 versus 5 years.